It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Yemen appears to have stepped back from further chaos. Yemen's embattled president, Abd Rabo Mansour Hadi, says he's reached agreement with Houthi rebels who have besieged his residence. He's offered to scrap a proposed constitutional change, while rebels have agreed to withdraw from their seized positions and release a top official. The concessions came after 3 days of violence in the capital, Sana'a, something Washington has been watching closely. Houthi militants oppose a controversial new federal system for Yemen, which some feared would weaken their influence. UN Ebola chief David Nabarro said Wednesday UN agencies need another $1 billion to fight the deadly Ebola epidemic.
In September, we asked for nearly $1 billion. We readjusted the estimate in October to 1.5, and so the appeal was for around $1.5 billion. By the end of 2014, we had raised just around $1 billion of that $1.5 billion. Subsequently, we've further increased our needs. The total needs for resources is $1 billion now, and that's what we need to raise.
Speaking in Davos, Switzerland, Mr. Nabarro said a total of $4 billion is needed by relief agencies and the worst-affected countries to end the epidemic and help those countries get back to their previous economic status. The World Health Organization said Wednesday the epidemic is slowing significantly, and the three most affected countries, Sierra Leone, Guinea, and Liberia, are adequately equipped to stem the tide. The UN Health Agency said in its latest update a total of more than 8,600 have died as of January 18th, with nearly 21,700 confirmed cases. This is VOA News. France announced it will cut 7,500 fewer military jobs than previously planned to step up the fight against terrorism following the attacks earlier this month in Paris that left 20 dead. Meanwhile, the French Prime Minister Manuel Valls says France will create more than 2,600 new security positions during the next 3 years to counter the threat of Islamic extremism. Kurdish fighters have launched what they call a new large-scale offensive against Islamic State in northern Iraq. Security officials say they're carrying out the operation near the vital Mosul Dam. They've also been backed by three U.S.-led coalition airstrikes near Mosul and three more airstrikes near Tal Afar. A number of IS buildings and heavy weapons were destroyed. Iraq's prime minister told the Associated Press Wednesday that coalition airstrikes have been very effective, but he said his government expects more help from the international community. U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Antony Blinken Wednesday said international negotiators hope to reach agreement with Iran in March on all the core elements to curb its controversial nuclear program. Mr. Blinken testified Wednesday before the Senate's Foreign Relations Committee.
Overall, our assessment remains that we have a credible chance to reach a deal that's in the best interests of America's security, as well as that of our allies and partners. Our goal is to conclude the major elements of the deal by the end of March, and then to complete the technical details by June.
Mr. Blinken told lawmakers the Obama administration opposes any further sanctions on Iran, saying that could undermine the negotiations. Lawmakers in both major parties support additional sanctions against Tehran. The United States and Cuba ended historic high-level talks in Havana Wednesday on improving relations after more than 50 years of estrangement. Alex Lee is the U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary for South America and Cuba.
Despite the clear differences that remain between our countries, the United States and Cuba can find opportunities to advance our mutually shared interests, as well as engage in a respectful and thoughtful dialogue.
Wednesday's talks were the first of two after President Obama and his Cuban counterpart Raul Castro announced last month their intention to reestablish relations broken in 1961. A top Lord's Resistance Army commander is in custody at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Dominic Ongwen will undergo examinations after being flown from the Central African Republic and is expected to make his first court appearance soon. His arrival at the court ends a nearly decade-long effort to have him face three counts of crimes against humanity and another four counts of war crimes. The ICC prosecutor says Ongwen is among those who bear the greatest responsibility for LRA atrocities. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Batty in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zambia's Electoral Commission suspends election results announcement by another day.
We had suspended the release yesterday because we had concerns that we had over 21,000 voters who had not been able to vote on the 20th and were thus going to vote on the 21st.
Priscilla Isaac is Director of Elections at the Electoral Commission of Zambia. A former South Sudan ruling party official says the decision to hold elections in June is unconstitutional. Who killed an ICC witness in Kenya? Ugandans wrestled with the issue of justice as a former surrendered LRA commander and victim arrives at the ICC. And Cameroon says its forces freed a German hostage from Boko Haram captivity.
Robert Nitsch Eberhard looked tired, hungry and unkempt when he arrived in Yaoundé on Wednesday. He told VOA he lost 50 kilograms in weight while in captivity.
That's report of Moki Edwin Kinzeka in Yaoundé. And a new exhibit examines efforts to eradicate tropical diseases. The stories plus Mark Oldman, sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Electoral Commission of Zambia says it will resume announcing results of the presidential by-election on Thursday, says Priscilla Isaac, Director of Elections at the Electoral Commission of Zambia. The commission had earlier suspended announcing the tally, saying some qualified voters were not being able to cast ballots on election day due to delays blamed on inclement weather. Isaac tells reporter Peter Clotty that it is unlikely that the winner of the election would be announced on today, Thursday.
We had suspended the release yesterday because we had concerns that we had over 21,000 voters who had not been able to vote on the 20th and were thus going to vote on the 21st. And we thought that we didn't want to put them in a position where they might be influenced by the results that were already being announced. So it's not an alien practice, and we have made this announcement to the public. And as a result, we hope to resume the announcing of the results later today.
So is it likely that today being Thursday, Zambians will know who won the election, or is it too early to determine that?
I think that would be rather early because we would still have to wait for the totaling of the votes in those constituencies where the voting did not take place in all the polling stations on the 20th.
How is the cooperation of political parties in verifying these results that you're getting from the field?
So when we get the results from the field, we verify them as incident. And they have their own copies from the field, from the polling stations and the constituencies, and are at liberty to verify what they have with what we give to them.
After the outcome of the election, any party that has any concerns, what are the processes for them to appeal?
Well, they'll have to petition to the Supreme Court within 14 days of the declaration of the final election result.
What is your message to Zambian voters who are waiting for the rest of the results to be announced by the Electoral Commission?
Our message is that they should be patient, they should not speculate. And, of course, there's the challenges of the online media and social media. But let's be patient. The commission is the only body mandated to declare the winner of any given election. Please, let's use where we are informing each other. Let's use the official results from the Electoral Commission, which would have been available at the polling stations and at the constituency centers. And there can only be one winner. And that winner will be declared by the Electoral Commission of Zambia when we have all the results in. So we are appealing to everybody to be patient and responsible as we wait for the declaration of the next president of the republic.
Priscilla Isaac is Director of Elections at the Electoral Commission of Zambia. She spoke with reporter Peter Clotte from the capital, Lusaka. There are late reports that the three opposing groups of the ruling Sudan People's Liberation Movement, the SPLM, have agreed to reunify the party. The breaking news comes from Arusha, Tanzania, where the groups had been meeting under the sponsorship of President Jakaya Kikwete. In another development, the former Secretary General of the SPLM says the decision by the South Sudan Electoral Commission to hold elections in June this year is unconstitutional. Pagan Amon says President Salva Kiir should instead focus on stopping the year-long civil war.
How can you hold elections when more than half of the population of South Sudan are literally displaced and destabilized by this war? How can you hold elections when there is insecurity in Jonglei, in Unity State, in Upper Nile, in Lakes State? Even in northern Bahr Ghazal, there is no way to hold elections, and the government was not ready to hold gubernatorial elections in that state.
But the head of the Electoral Commission is saying he is just following the Electoral Act, which says that the Electoral Commission should be formed and then appoint officials and conduct elections timely.
The Electoral Commission is making a big mistake. The Electoral Act that is referred to and the program starts first and foremost with formulation of a permanent constitution of South Sudan. The elections that are referred to in the constitution are only referred to organized under a permanent constitution of South Sudan. Also, in the constitution, there is reference, in addition to formulating a permanent constitution, that census should be conducted. Now, census has not been conducted. The constituencies have not been demarcated on the basis of the new constitution of the independent South Sudan. So what the Electoral Commission is doing, which is what the government has decided, is illegal, is unconstitutional, and it is immoral that they want to seek a legitimacy from very illegitimate situation and using very illegitimate instruments and tools.
But the government is also arguing that they don't want a power vacuum on July 9th this year, because this is the time when the term of the current parliament expires.
There can be no power vacuum if the government prioritizes peace, reaching a peace agreement, and that peace agreement will provide a legitimacy to form a government of national unity that will urge South Sudan through a transition to take South Sudan out of this war and build peace, and to take South Sudan to formulate a permanent constitution for South Sudan with the participation of all South Sudanese people.
Pagan Amon is the former Secretary General of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement. He was speaking from Denver, Colorado in the United States with John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. Robert Nitsch Eberhard, a German citizen who was kidnapped by suspected Boko Haram militants last July, has arrived in Cameroon after gaining his freedom. Neither German nor Cameroonian officials are explaining how he was released. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports for VOA from Yaoundé.
Robert Nitsch Eberhard looked tired, hungry and unkempt when he arrived in Yaoundé on Wednesday. He told VOA he lost 50 kilograms in weight while in captivity.
Until the last minute, I not know I survive or I not survive. This was for me a big problem. Yeah, because this was darkness, you understand, total dark. And then you see nobody around you, and this is a big problem to say, okay, I will survive or not survive.
Eberhard said he was kept in a dirty room during his entire stay in captivity, and said that he had been saved from the mouth of a lion. It was not clear whether the lion was figurative or real.
When you have a long time where nobody talk with you, you understand? Nobody. So soon you go here, you die.
The German ambassador to Cameroon, Klaus Ludwig Kefertstein, thanked Cameroon's government for securing Eberhard's release, but would not divulge how it happened.
We are very grateful to the Cameroonian government that we could find a solution to the problem of this hostage taking.
What happened before he was released?
No, I cannot comment on the details of the case. We are just grateful that we have found a solution for this.
Eberhard was working as a teacher in northeastern Nigeria last July when he was kidnapped by suspected Boko Haram fighters. The group has kidnapped hundreds of people in the past year, though most of those taken have been Nigerians. Sometime in the past few days, he was released and brought to Marwa, near Cameroon's border with Nigeria, in the company of a top official in Cameroon's presidency, Ferdinand Gongo. From Marwa, he was brought to Yaoundé on a military flight. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 22nd. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 and a half minutes past the hour. An alleged witness in the International Criminal Court case against Kenya's deputy president, William Ruto, was found murdered near his home in what many assumed was an attempt to silence him. But doubts about the identity of the victim and unanswered questions about his alleged testimony have deepened the mystery. Viewer's Gabe Jaslow has the story.
Late last year, a man's badly mutilated body was found in this river outside the town of Eldoret. The body was first identified as Meshack Yebe, an alleged witness in the ICC case against Kenya Deputy President William Ruto. Ruto and radio journalist Joshua Arap-Sang are charged by the court with crimes against humanity for inter-ethnic violence that followed the 2007 presidential election. Recent media reports say Yebe was supposed to testify for the defense, or was he? Ken Wafula, director of the Center for Human Rights and Democracy, says Yebe's intentions were not entirely clear, and he may have been killed over money he was promised in exchange for his testimony.
This guy was, if this guy was to be a defense witness, he had not decided, because there were pending issues of unsettled promises. So at the time of his disappearance or his death, he was neither a defense witness nor a prosecution witness, because he was in the middle.
In the case of the ICC originally approached Yebe to testify for the prosecution, but dropped him for tampering with other witnesses.
And also,
prosecutors have complained about the rampant bribery and intimidation of witnesses that they say also eroded the case against Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta. But the Yebe story took another strange twist earlier this month. Just as his relatives were preparing for his funeral, another family claimed the body belonged to a different man named Yusuf Hussein. Ben Yebe, Meshack's brother, denies there is any mistake.
These people had not reported anywhere that their person was missing. So it was news today, and a number of people have heard. And like my parents are not, they are very down. We have called them and we've discussed, and they have said, although they are disturbed, but they are going to wait for the end result. Because at this point, you can't do anything. The body is under investigation.
Hussein's family declined to talk to VOA for this story. Police reportedly took fingerprints to show the body was Hussein. But it's not clear what motive there would have been to kill Hussein, and Yebe's whereabouts have not been accounted for. Yebe's aunt, Rebecca, says a DNA test will reveal the truth.
We are told to go for the DNA test, and I am very optimistic the results will be positive. I am convinced the corpse is Yebe's. I believe the results will help identify Meshack.
Both families await results of the tests. If it is Yebe, at least one mystery will be solved, but many more questions about what he may have known and who may have wanted him dead will remain unanswered. Gabe Joselo, VOA News, Nairobi.
In Uganda, the surrender of senior LRA commander Dominic Ongwen earlier this month has become a divisive issue. The notorious rebel, who will now face war crimes charges at the International Criminal Court in The Hague, was himself abducted and abused by the Lord's Resistance Army when he was just a child. As Elizabeth Pollard reports from Kampala, Ugandans are wrestling with the issue of what is justice when the abused becomes the abuser.
Dominic Ongwen was only 10 years old when, while walking to school, he was abducted by the Lord's Resistance Army, which had terrorized Uganda and its neighbors for decades and is infamous for forcing tens of thousands of children to become soldiers or sexual slaves. Under the threat of death, Ongwen was forced to abuse, kill, and take part in mass atrocities alongside his military commanders. By the time he was 18, Ongwen had reportedly earned a fearsome reputation in the terrorist group. As an adult, he made his way into the inner circle surrounding LRA leader Joseph Kony. In 2005, while investigating war crimes in northern Uganda, the ICC issued an arrest warrant for Ongwen, citing crimes against humanity. A decade later, and nearly a quarter of a century after his abduction, Unwin walked out of the bush January 6th, surrendering and igniting debate in his home country. Because of Unwin's unique status as victim and perpetrator, the case against him is shining a spotlight on the ideas of justice, forgiveness, and reconciliation. In Uganda, opinion divides geographically. For many in southern Uganda, Dominic Unwin is an enemy of the state who should be tried for his crimes in Uganda and perhaps even executed. But for many northerners, despite being brutally targeted by the LRA, very few child soldiers are seen as wholly responsible for the crimes they committed. Joseph Ogama, who grew up amidst the conflict in northern Uganda, explains the mentality behind this forgiveness. Ugandan legal experts like Nicholas Opio contend that Ongwen's status as a child soldier does not and should not exempt him from being held responsible for his crimes.
And that moral argument is an argument that's being made by people in northern Uganda, religious leaders and people like that. That moral argument is that, look, this is a child soldier, this is a child who found himself in rebellion because of the failure of the state to protect him in the first place. But that for me is a moral argument. If you place that moral argument within the legal argument, that can only work not in defense, but in mitigation for any punishment that he might receive from the court. Because the culpability of Ongwen cannot be extinguished by the fact that he was a child soldier.
Opio argues that justice will be best served by the ICC rather than a Ugandan court, but Uganda has a contentious relationship with the international court. In December, President Yoweri Museveni called on the African Union to pull out of the ICC, calling it biased against African leaders. When Ongwen surrendered, the government changed its view and allowed the ICC to take custody of Ongwen. Despite its critics, legal experts suggest that the ICC can accomplish more than Uganda, most importantly, allowing LRA victims to finally be heard. Elizabeth Pola, VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Diseases such as malaria, river blindness, and elephantiasis continue to cause immense suffering, disfigurement, and often death in many parts of the world. Yet, many of these diseases are little known today in the Western world. A new museum exhibit in New York highlights these diseases and what the Carter Center, among others, is doing to control or eliminate them. Viewers Adam Phillips reports.
At a press preview for the Countdown to Zero Defeating Disease exhibit at the American Museum of Natural History, former President Jimmy Carter noted that many diseases, such as polio and malaria, no longer affect people in the U.S. and Europe.
But they afflict hundreds of millions of people in the poorest nations on Earth, particularly, I'd say, in sub-Saharan Africa and also, of course, in Latin America and other places.
Many in the West have not even heard of several of the worst diseases in those places, says Craig Withers of the Carter Center.
People know about polio, they know about malaria, but they don't know about other what are now referred to traditionally within the public health community as neglected tropical diseases.
Information about river blindness, a tropical parasitic disease caused by the bite of a certain species of black fly, is prominently displayed at the Countdown to Zero exhibit. 99% of the estimated 120 million people at risk for river blindness live in Africa. Semi-annual drug treatment has nearly eliminated the problem in Latin America, and health officials hope for similar success in Africa. The exhibit also highlights a devastating illness called lymphatic filariasis, commonly called elephantiasis. It threatens almost a billion people worldwide. Withers says it's caused by a mosquito-borne parasite.
You're bitten by a mosquito, and the parasite goes into the lymphatic system and starts to block it. Its primary manifestation is enlargement of the limbs, primarily legs, but it also can affect the genitalia. We did a study in Nigeria, and we found, I want to say, 40% of the men in the rural districts had enlarged scrotum.
Withers adds that in Africa, the mosquito that causes elephantiasis also transmits malaria. Mosquito bed netting and one effective pharmaceutical cocktail of two drugs is helping to control both diseases. One disease that the Carter Center has helped to nearly eradicate is guinea worm. It's caused by a parasite within a crustacean that thrives in the rain ponds many rural Africans depend on for drinking water. President Carter says that in 1986, when guinea worm eradication efforts began, there were over 3.5 million cases of the disease. Now, Carter says there are only 126 known cases of guinea worm left in the world. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on the Orange African Cup of Nations in Equatorial Guinea. Leading by example, Captain Prince Onyango struck the back of the net in the 48th minute to hand the Republic of Congo a 1-0 victory over Gabon in Bata on Wednesday. Earlier on, Equatorial Guinea and Burkina Faso drew 0-0 in the other group, a tie. Consequently, the Congolese topped the group with 4 points. Gabon has 3, Equatorial Guinea 2, and Burkina Faso 1 point. Elsewhere, attention shifts to Ebebiyin for Group B action today, Thursday. All 4 teams are tied with 1 point each following their identical 1-1 first round draws. Zambia play Tunisia, then Cape Verde Islands face the Democratic Republic of Congo. Staying in Ebebiyin, Zambian coach Ehona Janza expects a fast attacking game against Tunisia. He's confident they're up to the challenge despite the absence of playmaker Nathan Sinclair. Color, he explains.
Tony Nathan is missing. I think the rest of the players, they are all there. Of course, it's a painful situation for Nathan, but of course we come with 23 players, so we have to make do with the other players that we came with. It's quite painful that a player like Nathan can be ruled of the tournament due to injury in the first game. So we have to go forward. Tunisia will be looking for the 3 points. We'll be looking for 3 points, so it will be quite an interesting match because all of, even as Zambia, we want to advance. We want to go to the quarterfinals. It's only the best team that will carry the day. They are very confident because if you watched our game against Congo, Congo is not a pushover. Of course, scored. We made a mistake, but we have to amend the mistake. I think we have the strength. We have the young boys that can play, can go forward. We have the speed. We have what it requires in the modern football. We are fast as well. We have got good technique. We have good skilled players. I think we are a balanced team.
That was Ona Janza, the Zambia coach, speaking in Ebebiyin. Still in Ebebiyin, Tunisian coach George Leekens is a positive his side will rise to the challenge against Zambia. He elaborates.
And certainly we do everything to win the game. And I believe in my players. I believe also it will not be an easy game. We hope to have also a fantastic day. Fantastic maybe also for the football, because till now it's nice football. I look to my team. We can have a result.
That was George Leekens, the Tunisia coach, speaking in Ebebiyin. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a wonderful day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Zambia's Electoral Commission halted the release of presidential election results on Wednesday as voting in some districts stretched into its second day. In a statement on its website, the chair of the commission, Justice Irene Mambilima, said continued announcement of the results while people were still voting could unduly influence the voters. A top Lowest Resistance Army commander is now in custody at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Dominic Ongwen will undergo medical exams after being flown on Tuesday from the Central African Republic and is expected to make his first court appearance soon. His arrival at the court ends a nearly 10-year effort to have him face 3 counts of crimes against humanity and another 4 counts of war crimes. That is it for this Thursday, January 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckfro, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I am James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good Thursday.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. And on Fridays, you can also hear my 30-minute show at 17:30 UTC. On the internet, like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Check voaafrica.com for the addresses and enjoy the show. VOA.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impuga.
Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on The Voice of America.